Welcome to TechNation Health, reimagining the future of health and healthcare with the emergence of new technologies and breakthrough science. Today, the journey of a neuroscientist, from academia to industry, and now today, the founder and CEO of a drug development company, Tetra Discovery Partners. Tetra focuses on treating such problems as behavior and cognition in Fragile X syndrome and memory loss in early to moderate Alzheimer's disease or following traumatic brain injury. I think we can all appreciate that scientists have long careers, and they're always very enthusiastic to talk about their latest research. But I realize that this neuroscientist made a significant scientific discovery very early in his career. It was in the area of Alzheimer's disease, and I hoped we might start there. Dr. Mark Gurney is the CEO of Tetra Discovery Partners.
Yeah, we were searching. Thank you, Maura. I really appreciate the invitation to be on your show. We were searching for the enzymes that cause Alzheimer's disease back in 1995, 1996, and that was the point in time where the human genome was first being sequenced, and we knew that in Alzheimer's disease there is a characteristic change in the brain. There's protein deposits that develop, and those are called amyloid. And the amyloid is a small piece of a larger protein. And so we thought that if we could understand how that protein was cut into pieces to form these little amyloid deposits, that maybe we could inhibit that protein that was doing the cutting, and that would give us a novel therapeutic approach that might have benefit in Alzheimer's disease. I had the opportunity to work with a strong group of biochemists at my former company, Pharmacia. They had been working on drugs to treat AIDS virus, and they were interested in a protease, an enzyme that cuts an AIDS virus protein into pieces, and then that allows the virus to assemble. So we were in a discussion one day, and we were looking at the amino acid sequence of the amyloid, the Alzheimer's precursor protein, and we were looking at the sequence of the AIDS virus and the enzyme that was cutting the AIDS virus, and we recognized that, gee, it's the same kind of site, different types of proteases, the enzymes that cut other proteins, recognize specific sites. So we said, well, what do you think? Do you think that the beta secretase, this really important enzyme in Alzheimer's disease, might be an aspartyl protease? We said, sure, why don't we look for it? And so at that time, in the late 90s, the first human genome sequencing efforts were underway, and we had access to that data as it was coming off the sequencers. So we said, well, could we find a new aspartyl protease? There were only four that had been so far discovered in the human genome. And so I had a wonderful colleague in Sweden, in Stockholm, who had access to the computer that had all the DNA sequence information on it. So we spent a weekend in Stockholm, sitting in a lab together, Saturday and Sunday, looking for aspartyl proteases. And we found two. And we got really excited by that because, well, there was only four, and now we had six. And then we knew that this Alzheimer's protein was in a membrane. And the two new proteases that we found were also in a membrane. So that was...
Ooh, this is exciting.
It was.
This is your kind of a fun weekend as a scientist.
Yeah. We know how to have a good time.
Yeah.
And so we came away with those two sequences. And then one of those proteins was present on chromosome 21. And we knew that in Down syndrome and trisomy 21, there's advanced Alzheimer's pathology. So then we went back to the lab and we made antisense oligos and knocked out the two proteins and found one of them was the beta secretase, and that was it. And so now, 20 years later, beta secretase inhibitors are finally in human clinical trials for Alzheimer's disease. And unfortunately, we're somewhat disappointed by the results. So far, the companies that have developed these drugs have failed to show clinical benefit either in prodromal Alzheimer's or in mild to moderate Alzheimer's. So we were on a path. That path took 20 years, and how many billions of dollars of investment, I can't imagine. And we need new ideas now.
And, you know, sometimes you've found one part of the answer, and then you need one or two others together to make it all work.
Well, the reason this took 20 years before we could run the clinical trial is that it was so difficult to design the drug molecule. So even though we had the DNA sequence, and even though we could make the protein, and even though we could crystallize the protein and understand its structure, it still took 20 years of chemistry before anyone could figure out how to make a little organic compound that would fit like a lock and key into that enzyme and inhibits its action.
Well, nothing will feel so good as when you actually figured out that enzyme.
Yeah, that was fun. That was how scientists have a good time, as you say.
You were really having a good time. No doubt about
it. Yeah, we were
no
astounded it worked it. As well as it did.
Well, you've moved through academia. You've moved through several companies now. And now you're the CEO of Tetra Discovery Partners. Tell us about that.
Tetra is a biotechnology company. We have a drug that's beginning trials in Fragile X syndrome, which is a genetic form of autism. It's a genetic disease. It's due to a change, a mutation in a gene on the X chromosome, so boys are affected more strongly than girls. It's an orphan disease. It affects about 40,000 men in the United States, mostly boys. And we're working with a really wonderful physician, Dr. Elizabeth Barry Kravis, who's in Chicago. And Dr. Barry Kravis, as a young physician, was interested in the biochemistry of Fragile X syndrome. And she made a fundamental observation that there was a change in a particular signaling pathway that's important for how one neuron in the brain communicates with another neuron. She made that observation in 1987, so 30 years ago.
Even before you found your enzyme.
And so finally the gene that causes Fragile X syndrome was discovered. And once that gene was discovered, it was possible to study the gene in animals, in fruit flies and in mice. And in fact, when you make the same mutation in the animals, you see the same change in the biochemistry. That the cyclic AMP levels go down. And what this means in the brain is that the neurons in the brain that carry memories don't make connections correctly. So they wire up, but those connections aren't stabilized. And in the end, when we form a memory, that's how we store the memory in our brain. It's kind of like a computer. It's hardwired in there, and there's a little circuit, and you tickle that circuit, and your memory of mom and her apple pie comes out, right? And so in Fragile X syndrome, all of those connections between neurons fail to mature.
So they're temporary, if you will. Or
they're temporary. They're not stabilized. The patients can't form memories, and they don't understand. And so there's severe intellectual disability. And then that's accompanied by anxiety and hyperarousal. They're very sensitive to sounds. And then also autistic spectrum disorder. So there's a failure to interact socially with their parents, with caregivers, with people around them. And you see that, too, in the animals. When that gene is changed in fruit flies, they can't learn and they don't court. So when you put a fruit fly male with a female, he'll normally wiggle her wings at her. That's a courtship dance. And the Fragile X fruit flies don't wiggle their wings.
There you go.
So there you go.
Science can be so simple.
Yeah. And in fact, when you change this signaling pathway in the fruit flies, then they do wiggle their wings and they can remember,
If you can't remember, you can't learn.
That's right. And then you never can, adapt to the environment or remember.
Everything is scary.
Yes.
Everything is for the first time. No wonder you've got anxiety.
Of course. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So we now have a drug that can change that signaling pathway. That can the signaling pathway is called the cyclic AMP signaling pathway, and there's not enough cyclic AMP in the brain of a Fragile X patient. So we now have, for the first time, have a drug that can increase the amount of that molecule, and we know in the mice that it actually improves behavior. Now the Fragile X mice do have social interaction. They are less anxious. They learn. They remember. They bury marbles. They build nests. They do all those nice things that normal mice do. But the Fragile X mice do not. So we're just starting our what's called a phase two, a mid-stage clinical trial with Dr. Barry Kravis in Chicago. And we're really excited to see what the results of this trial will be.
And that means it's in humans.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Kids, right?
Well, in this initial clinical trial, the patients are 18 to 45 years of age.
Okay, so these are grown up.
These are grown up people, yeah. And then as we show safety and tolerability, then we can move into younger and younger patients. So ultimately, we'd like to be able to treat patients from 6 years of age and on. But you don't start with a 6-year-old. You start with a 25-year-old. We use social media to connect with patients about our programs. And it's been a very interesting give and take. Initially when we started doing it, some of the patients wondered, well, why is this biotech company wanting to speak with me about my son or my disease? And we thought we would sort of upend the standard way of designing a clinical trial. We might start with the patient and ask
what?
Them.
This is all supposed to be inside our heads.
Yeah, believe it or not. Why not start with the patient and ask them, what would they like the drug to do? How can we help them with the condition that they face? We also, for a rare disease like Fragile X syndrome, we wanted to know where the patients were and who was treating them. And it was actually easier to start with the patients than you would have thought. Normally, you start with the physicians or you start with a CRO, a contract research organization. But in this case, we started with the patients. And actually, our Fragile X program is a really nice example of a public-private partnership. So as a drug company, we're a private company. And we partnered with the Fraxa Research Foundation with Dr. Mike Tranfaglia. And so Fraxa had set up the mechanism where we could send our drug to them, and they had the Fragile X mice, and they were willing to do the assessment of the drug in the mice. And then we were all delighted to see that in the mice it actually worked. You know, it improved the connections between the neurons in the brain, and it improved all the behaviors. And then they connected us with Dr. Barry Kravis. So we said to them, well, gee, should we run a clinical trial? And they said, of course you should. And of course we'd be willing to help. And so in the design of the clinical trial, we also took a patient and physician-centric approach. We said, well, Dr. Barry Kravis, you're the expert. How would you design the trial? What clinical assessments would you make? Normally the drug company comes to the physician and says, this is the trial I want you to run.
And we won't tell you the endpoints, because this would foul up the science, because then you'd be trying to go to that goal.
Not quite. It's that the physicians are closest to the patients, and the patients are closest to themselves. And so that's the way you would like the information to flow upwards to the company, is what do you want the drug to do? For example, in Parkinson's disease, the current drugs control the movement disorder. But also the patients are concerned about whether or not they might develop dementia. And it's the cognitive impairment that then prevents them from holding a job, from living what they would consider an active and normal life. And so the new drugs for Parkinson's that patients would like are drugs that treat the cognitive changes, the functional changes. That was a surprise to me, and I found that very interesting. And that actually came out of a conference that the FDA held with patients to understand what they thought their needs were. FDA is doing this too. Isn't that remarkable?
I think it's great. I think it's great. Everybody is. In the case of Parkinson's, what is obvious to everybody? They can see the tremors or the change in mobility. So that seems to be the obvious thing to fix, but it's not the patient.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah, if you ask the patients what needs fixing, they would say, gee, I'm really worried about developing dementia. Another example of a public-private partnership for TETRA is we partnered with a program at the National Institute of Health for the discovery of our drug. So we were part of what's called the NIH Blueprint Program. And it was a collaboration between all the different institutes at the NIH that fund research on the brain. So the neurologic disorders and stroke, aging, mental health. The directors all pooled money together and decided that they would create a model like a virtual biotech. So a company or an academic group could come with a therapeutic idea and the biology, and the NIH would provide services. So they had consultants that were senior executives from in different disciplines in pharma and contractors for doing chemistry. And so we worked together with them for 2-3 years and discovered this wonderful molecule and were able to then bring it into the clinic. So it's an example, again, how different business models are being developed to defray some of the risk of finding new drugs. Most of them don't work. And companies are running out of money to invest in new drug molecules. And, you know, the investment community is not making any money back to reinvest in new ideas. And so, again, the NIH was trying to fill a gap.
Well, Mark, thank you so much. This has been terrific. I hope you come back and see us again.
Thank you so much, Mara. It's really a delight to be on your show.
Dr. Mark Gurney is the founder and CEO of TETRA Discovery Partners. More information is available at tetradiscovery.com. That's T-E-T-R-A, TETRA, tetradiscovery.com. For Tech Nation Health, I'm Moira Gunn.
Tech Nation and its regular segment Biotech Nation are produced at the studios of KQED-FM in San Francisco. Executive producer is Matt Gardner. The director of technical production is Monte Carlos. And audio engineers include Howard Gelman, Seal Muller, and Larry Upton. Our theme music was composed by Ann Nachtrieb-Zesiger and Robert Powell, with title creation provided by NameLab Incorporated of San Francisco. Program information and internet audio is available on the web at technation.com. Tech Nation and Biotech Nation are productions of Tech Nation Media. I'm Paul Landcore.